Hello, welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast about following Watford FC, brought to you by The Athletic. It is a Wednesday evening and Watford have just won Watford scored three goals for the first time this season, one at home to Blackburn Rovers. It was a two-goal lead. Blackburn got one back, but the Hornets put the third in early in the second half to not kill the tie off, but definitely to put them in a stronger position, which they were able to see out to the end. My name is John, with me is Mike.
I hope Vlad would be proud of me, because I'm actually just thinking then I'm more cross that we let one in than the fact we've scored three.
And thank goodness I am joined by Colin as well.
Good evening, everybody.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to start with Colin, because Colin, I'm not saying this is the greatest game of football I've ever watched, but there was something really comforting about watching this contest.
I mean, you're absolutely right to say that, John. This was the beginning of the season for me, really. This is kind of the game I expected in the Championship. Lots of energy from the opposition. Definitely the best team we've played so far. I thought when they got it into the final third, which was one of the reasons they weren't able to really get the point that I suspect they feel like they deserved, because they did play well. They were clearly the best team we played against. For me, they played a little bit like a Graham Taylor side. Get the ball down, knock it into the box, terrify the opposition defenders and try and score. And in fact, their goal came from a classic sort of Taylor philosophy, which is if you don't shoot, you don't score. And he had a good shot, hit it hard. It bounced just before Ben and went in. There were times in this game where I felt nervous that they were going to get back in the game, score goals. But I would say that the real quality in this match, the real moments of quality, the players with that real little extra touch, little extra vision, we'll go into each goal in detail, I'm sure. But I felt that the real quality in this match came from Watford, and that is why we've run out the winners.
I think you've done Blackburn a massive disservice there, Colin. I think they absolutely bossed that first half in the way they played football. I thought they were energetic. I thought the way they moved the ball around was really good. And you know, they're not a Premier League standard, but like you say, they're far away the best team we've played. But they had Watford on the back foot almost from the get-go, and they had Watford bent out of shape a lot, I thought, in that first half. And I think Vladimir Ivic would have been slightly concerned at what he'd seen. The first team really who has had us on the back foot, and I thought they played in neat triangles. They were aggressive, they played a long way up the pitch, they hassled and harried, but they played some neat football as well. And I think they made a lot of the running, certainly in that first half, and probably will have gone in at half time feeling unlucky to be
I don't know why they would have been unlucky, because they conceded two really quite poor goals. If you really look at it, a ball from Garner that went straight through their defence and across from our right wing back to an open centre forward. In the end, our quality in the final third is what meant when we went in half time ahead, and they will be disappointed with that. Yes, they had the ball, yes, they put us under pressure, but they couldn't produce anything in the final third, and we could, and that was the difference between the two teams from where I was sitting.
I do love the enthusiasm, and I do share it, but I think Ben Foster had to make a number of saves. I think we have to remember that Christian Cabaselli was lucky not to be sent off after 20 minutes. I think if that had been a Premier League referee, I think he probably would have walked. I think Cabaselli then switched off from the resultant free kick. Ben Foster had to make a fantastic reaction save low down to his right. And you know, I'm not beating Watford up over this, and I think you've touched on it, Colin. I think you made the right point, in as much as our quality was better than their quality. So when we had the chances, we took ours, and I think that, to sort of call them two poor goals, I think it's actually, they weren't poor goals. I think we had that pace up front and that little bit of extra touch. Kike showed throughout, you know, he had that little touch. We were better when it counted, as you rightly say. But I think Blackburn put the cat amongst the pigeons, and you're right, the difference was our quality, and we did deserve to be ahead because we took our chances and they didn't.
I totally agree with you, Mike. They did put the cat among the pigeons, but we were able to kind of stand up to them, so it was good.
You're right, and yeah, the goals came from the quality. Let's talk about those quality, where that quality came from, particularly Mr. João Pedro continued, Mike, with his goal run. With another goal with his new buddy, who's becoming his best friend almost, Mr. Zaha up front.
Yeah, and I think for the first 20 minutes they looked a little bit isolated up there on for the first 15 minutes or so, and they looked a little bit cut off and a little bit sort of not downhearted, because you'd be worried if a player looked downhearted 15 minutes into a match. But you thought, are they going to make the right decisions when they get the ball? And I thought Ismaïl Assar probably dwelled on the ball a couple of times and didn't make the right decision a couple of times early on. But when they did click, which they did twice in what was it three or four minutes there in the first half, they looked great, and João Pedro is growing, I think, week in week out. He looks strong, he looks brave, and he looks like he's relishing this role. When Blackburn had some big old boys out there tonight, no quarter asked or given. There's some crunching tackles sat here. You can really hear the connection when they clip your heels or thud into your shin or whatever. But he's not shirking it at all, and I love that about João Pedro. I think he's growing almost sort of visibly in front of our eyes week in, week out. And I thought he took his goal absolutely superbly, steering it into that bottom left. Really nicely taken goal.
The Troy Deeney before the game, you didn't see this, Mike, because it was on the you were at the game, of course, as we can hear the hubbub of Vicarage Road. There was Tommy Mooney in the commentary, and also Troy beforehand did talk about how, you know, he's being a student of the game, and he still has certain little things he could do to get more out of his performances. But like you say, it's been a huge, huge improvement from him over these last two games. Colin, his partner in crime, Czar, up there with him. Did he add a huge amount, do you think, to the attacking options for Watford in this game?
I think he did in the first half. I think in the first half he really put that poor old left back under the gosh, poor fella. I think he's called Dybala, is that right? And he was just like, I just want to go home and you know, get a comfort blanket, because this is no fun. But what was interesting at half time was that Deeney said, everything's going down the right hand side, and actually what they need to do is to switch it out to the left hand side from time to time, where you've got Ken Semmer. Then you take a little bit of pressure off Saar, and then if you can make that diagonal ball back into Saar, he might have more space to operate in. But, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that Ismaïl Assar makes us a better side when he plays, and he played really well tonight. I thought that he was in the game for pretty much, and really for the first sort of 75 minutes, and then he was starting to sort of slightly fade out. He went off to Africa in the international break. He came back late, couldn't play in the Derby game, and so obviously, you know, there is a certain amount of fatigue surrounding him. But when he's on it, and when he can get the ball at his feet, when he can take on a defender, he really gives us an extra dimension that most teams in the Championship simply don't have. His pace is just eye-wateringly good, and also his finesse with the ball at his feet is improving. You're seeing a player who has come in for a lot of money, the most money we've ever spent on a player at our club. And he's got a lot of raw talent, but you can starting to see the canniness, you know, which is part of his talent, the finesse, the little pass, the dink, the chop back, the way that he can cut inside, doesn't always go to the byline. And I thought that really the thing that stood out in the game tonight, having been rather hesitant and worried about the idea that Pedro and Saar were our front two very young and inexperienced players, I should say. Can they really work together? Neither of them are a number nine, really. You know, one is naturally a wide player, and the other is really kind of a number 10, I would say, going forward. He likes to sit a little bit deeper, Pedro, and play off, and then see if he's got, who's the striker, who can he get it into. But both of them are doing brilliantly well, because I thought that Pedro's goal was really his tap-in, if you want, was made by the fact that he had made a decision to get into the six-yard box, which is not, I don't think it's his natural game, but he's finding himself in the six-yard box in order to put himself in a position where he can get those goals, those types of goals. And Saar also, instead of just playing as an out-and-out, you know, a sprinting right winger, is also starting to come in a little bit. And I thought it was really interesting in the first half that Cleverley, who was ostensibly playing in a three-man central midfield, was actually finding space out on the left-hand side to give Watford an option as an outlet on that side of the pitch and take a bit of the pressure off those front two. But Saar definitely, he came in and he had a good performance tonight.
That second goal, the second goal came purely down to him. The Blackburn goalie spends a lot of time towards the edge of his box. He plays quite advanced, I think, presumably to spring into action and clear his lines if necessary. But the pace of Saar really undid him for that second goal, because he was on him so quickly. The turn, and he was in before the goalie really knew what he was doing. So he was always bent out of shape, and Shmaila Saar unlucky not to score and cleverly there with the rebound. But I think that showed just what we have in Shmaila Saar. Just that brief sort of couple of seconds, the goalie, you know, against most other teams, he's not going to have that. He's not going to have someone who will just have that spring-heeled pace that will bend him completely out of shape in a split second. And that's what we've got with Shmaila Saar. And Colin's right. I think what they're finding is the ways to best impose themselves on the game. I spoke about João Pedro sort of growing physically and relishing the challenge. And I think Colin's absolutely right. And that's one of the most exciting things about Shmaila Saar, is the way he learns how he can use his talents and skills to best benefit Watford. And I think we saw more tonight from him than we potentially have so far. So, yeah, really encouraging signs with those two, with of course, plenty to come back up top.
The two players learning a little bit more, improving every single game they're playing. But Tom Cleverley got the second goal. Got a new contract, an extension to his current one this week. Some quite negativity on Twitter, which I really, really, really don't understand. We know his role he has. We know what he does. And Mike, particularly, do you sort of see, you at these games, do you sort of see him in that sort of captain position and with those young players around him, talking to them quite a lot?
What's notable to this evening was that the Blackburn were very, very, very vocal indeed. Virtually to a man, you'd hear them all G'ing each other up, in at the ref, shouting. Very, very vocal. Not something you get from Watford. Ben Foster, as we've seen in his YouTube videos, we know is very vocal. I did have a look. I didn't see him hastily kick the GoPro camera out of sight after he conceded that goal. But I think you're absolutely right, John. What you allude to is that he's that bit of experience, that wise head, someone who can guide those youngsters around him who are learning the game and still finding their feet, certainly in this division. And I don't think he's a sort of howling, yelling banshee of a player, but he is that sort of tough tackling, experienced player who knows when to have a little word with the ref, knows when to get his foot in. So yeah, I think he's really important in that side. Certainly at the moment, while we saw Kapu come on later in the game, we're still waiting for Will Hughes. So it still is a sort of midfield that is trying to find its feet, really. And I didn't think it looked great in terms of balance, certainly in the first half tonight and in periods. But cleverly for me, whilst he doesn't always have the best performances, I think he is a key component at the moment in that midfield role. So I think it's no surprise to me that he's been given that extra contract. Yes, like you say, John, for his on the pitch, but also I imagine on training he's keeping people honest. He can talk in the training in the dressing room, that sort of stuff. We do need senior pros around this squad, and he's most definitely one of those. International Premier League experience, I'm glad we've still got him.
And also, I thought he read the game really well tonight. I mean, the fact that he scored that goal was because he read the move, and he could see that the ball over the top, which was a fairly speculative ball forward, was sort of nodded onto his shoulder by Saar, then brought down by his right foot. But cleverly busted his, you know, a gut to get into a position where there was no one anywhere near him. No one picked him up. I mean, this is what I'm talking about, the sort of mistakes that they made for those goals. There was no one anywhere near cleverly. No one had spotted his run into the box. And that's what Tom Cleverley can give us, because in his youth, you know, he was an attacking midfielder. As he's got older, he's become a more of a central kind of controlling midfielder. But in that instance, he read the moment. He thought, if Saar can get control of this ball, there's a moment there. There's a massive amount of space in front of me. Get into the box, Tom. And if it rebounds, I might get a chance to score. And that's exactly what happened. And that's what he can give us. I mean, that's a very, very vital goal. And it's a very important goal during the match, but also possibly for our season.
The other man, well, he has to be the man of the match, really. I'm sure we'll see some great footage on his YouTube channel, because he's a YouTube sensation now. Mr.
He totally
Ben Foster.
Is the goalkeeping cyclist. Or is he the cycling GK? I can't remember. Yeah, but it's super stuff. You should watch it.
Yeah, and you can watch that on YouTube. He, you know, in the first half, Mike, it was some absolutely fantastic saves. It tops off when a goalkeeper saves a penalty, but just doing what Ben does and just proving again he's got to be the best goalkeeper in the Championship.
So yeah, up there definitely. There's no sort of, there was a little bit of talk about Liverpool coming in for him in the transfer window. I don't think anything materialised, but the fact that wasn't really a surprise, it shows just how good good he is. And what I thought was fantastic, I sort of was perhaps a little bit harsh on Cabba with his giving away that free kick, but that save that Ben Foster made from the resultant free kick when Cavaselli got that booking low down to his right is one of those you've got a split second to react. He did it, ultimately, you know, dropped one in a couple of minutes later, but he hadn't had a save to make. I think he'd had 9 saves to make in the Championship League season so far up until that point. So to remain switched on when you know you've got a side that's going to be keeping the opposition chances down to a minimum, to be able to switch on like that, I think is absolutely fabulous. And he was great throughout. I thought he made some really terrific saves. He looked very, 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 very solid. He dominated his area. The speculative balls that Colin mentioned earlier that came increasingly as the game wore on, Ben Foster claimed without any real difficulty. And yeah, culminated in the last real piece of work he had to do was save that penalty. I mean, it did look, it's never easy to save a penalty, but he guessed right and it was at a reasonable height, wasn't it? So he'd have been disappointed had he not saved it, having gone the right way. But I think it capped off a really, really good performance for Ben Foster and an important one. And I think Colin and I weren't arguing at the start. I think we both agree that Watford deserved to win the game. But I think Blackburn did come close to getting something out of it, certainly in the first half. And the fact that they didn't is down in huge part tonight to Ben Foster. Absolutely superb performance, and you're right, John. I think we should be grateful to have him, and he has to be up there as one of, if not the best goalkeeper, perhaps in any second tier in the world. I'll put that one out there.
Well, you say that penalty save capped off a good performance, but the game was capped off, Colin, with the entrance of this season from one Etienne Capoue, and he quite quickly showed basically what he's going to do. Nutmeg quite a lot and dink some balls long to Ismail Azar.
Well, the good thing about Capoue, of course, is he's played in this team. It's not like he's a new signing. So he knows the geography of the side, and his connection with Azar, his diagonal balls out to the right are something that we have grown to love. It'll be interesting to see how he develops over the next 10 weeks before the window closes in terms of the thing that he's most known for, which is interceptions, closing players down, breaking up play, winning the ball. That's really been his biggest stat in his career. We love the languid diagonal passes, but it's interesting, you know, for a team like us, we've come down from the Premier League. It's very difficult to take as a fan. You know, that's what's happened, and we have to deal with it. But to still be able to bring on a player of the quality of Jeremy Ngakia when Firmino went off at right back, to bring on a player, you know, in a way as good, if not better than Firmino, and to bring up, to have to take off Cleverley, who, and you know, we're going to play another 4 games before the end of this month, or 3 games before the end of the month, to bring off Cleverley and bring on a player of the quality of Capoue does show our strength in depth. But I thought what was interesting about Capoue was he did look up for it. I mean, he did look up for the fight. Like, I'm playing football. This is the thing I love. I want to play football. And, here are these chaps in blue and white, and I'm going to get stuck in. We're in a good position in this game. We should win it. And I thought he really contributed when he came on. So that is good news for Watford Football Club.
He raised the level. I thought the way he sort of moves the ball, just whether it's to himself to get himself into position to move the ball on or to flick it on, I think he gave everyone a little bit of a boost when he came on, and just the level, just the quality in that midfield just did improve. It was slightly frenetic at times, but he's quite good at buying himself a little bit of time and then picking a pass. And Watford, even when they were under pressure, did stuck to their guns, didn't they, and passed the ball around quite nicely back there. And yeah, I think having just a player of the quality of Etienne Capoue, he just exudes that sort of
je ne sais quoi.
Oui, monsieur, oui, d'accord. Watford, you feel like a better unit with him in there. And I think as an opposition player, you think, right, I'm up against a serious operator here as well, who's going to be taking the ball away from me a lot. So great to see Capoue back. If I may, John, I'm just going to mention him very, very briefly, because I know we've talked about a lot. But in the first half, I thought we struggled down the left. I don't think we managed to get Ken Semmer into the game much at all. And then, of course, in the first half, in the second, you could see, I'm sat in the Sir Elton John stand, and I think probably within the first minute, 46 minute or something, he put a ball in across, and it was a very, very clever angled ball that I think he took it early, and it was slightly different angled into what the defence were expecting, and it really did ask some serious questions and got them thinking. And just a minute later, I think he earned that own goal with a brilliant ball in a minute earlier. So that was great that Ken Semmer didn't have a huge impact in the first half, I didn't think anyway. And then really you'd have hoped that goal killed the game off. But he earned that with a very, very clever run and very, very clever ball. So I was thrilled to see Ken Semmer make an impact.
Troy at half-time had said, if they go down the left a bit more, they'll make more space on the right. And so, and weirdly, they did do that. And again, it was about quality, wasn't it? The ball from Semmer for that third goal, the ball was of such quality that it turned the defenders to face their own goal. They couldn't see who was coming in behind them. He had to try and play it. And in a way, although, you know, an own goal is always a mistake, probably, you know, 99 times out of 100, it's a mistake, an own goal. But the quality of the ball into that, you know, it was sort of 3 yards between the keeper and the central defender. It was super. The person I'd like to talk about, I would say that we saw from Chalabar, you know, and again, another step forward in his improvement, because I thought he was really up for the fight in that midfield. Yes, there were times when it was a bit hurly-burly in there, but he never took a backward step. And I thought he and Garner, in fact, really worked hard in that central area in front of our back three, and you know, really, really worked much harder. And when he got the ball, he showed some quality. But I'm just beginning to feel like the Chalabar of old, or the new Chalabar, because he's not the same player as he was when he came to us on loan the first time, is suddenly starting to gel in that central midfield position, and he's starting to look like the player we hoped he would be. And I thought in the last 15 minutes, where things really got a bit easier for us because they started to tire, he again just that calmness and but also that aggressiveness, getting into tackles, you know, winning the ball, sniffing out danger, but then when he's got it, calm, pass it, knock it back to Ngakia, knock it forward. And I really was impressed with Chalabar today.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
On Monday evening, the club held an At Our Place fans forum in Old Money, where you didn't have to go to the ground. They were live on YouTube, and you can watch the whole event with Scott Duxbury, the CEO and chairman of the club, and Vladimir Ivic taking questions from fans. And afterwards, Mike and I caught up with Jacob Colshaw from the WD18 YouTube channel to find out about what we all felt about what was said by Scott and Vlad. The joy for this evening for me has to be the junior Hornets getting their questions in. I don't know about you, Mike. There was a certain honesty that I think events like this I've never been to before, never had.
Yeah, they couldn't have Arlo on because they couldn't trust that they'd hit the dump button soon enough for his blue loan. But no, I think, and that was indicative of the whole thing. I loved the fact that there was the video link up with not only with supporters, but like you say, John, the younger element as well. I think that's something that those kids will genuinely remember. You know, they'll be going to bed this evening. We're speaking right after the fans forum, buzzing at the opportunity to speak to Vladimir Ivic and Scott Duxbury, two absolutely key components of Watford Football Club. So to give the kids the chance to do that, I think, is absolutely fantastic, and it does speak to the way that Watford do things. You know, the media team there understand, I think, the importance of these things, and those little extra elements make it all the more worthwhile. And overall, it's great that they've done it, isn't it? I don't know how many other clubs will have done something similar, but I dare say it's not that many. So regardless of how people felt about the event and what they got from it, the fact that it exists in the first place, I think, is hugely impressive, very, very important. And as always, I think it's a big hat tip to the club for doing it. And like you say, John, that little extra flourish of having the junior Hornets on was brilliant. I certainly enjoyed that a lot.
I mean, every time I looked, I wasn't keeping an eye on it too long, over 2,000 fans, yeah, sort of watching at a time. And that's bigger than that you could ever got at an event like that before at Vicarage Road. I mean, you could technically fill Vicarage Road and sit them in the centre circle, but that's never going to happen. But Jacob, you know, taking away from it, what are you taking away from it?
We were saying before, not a lot that we didn't know already. I think the biggest one was, but one for me was about Adrian Mariappa's situation. I didn't actually think Watford wanted to keep him, but obviously Scott Duxbury basically confirmed that the club did, held long negotiations, couldn't find an agreement. And potentially the reason we haven't seen an announcement or even just an acknowledgement of Maps's time at Watford is potentially because it turned a little bit sour with the negotiations. I don't know. I'm only making rumours up. But yeah, that was a bit of an unusual one for me.
But Mike, what about that Maps? It was quite interesting that Scott admitted, you know, they had dropped the ball.
And I'm pretty disappointed on that because I've been quite vocal both on social media and on the podcast when people have brought up what's happening with Mariappa. And I've ad nauseam said, well, look, they're not going to forget one of their longest serving players, someone who came through the youth ranks, someone who is an incredible servant to the club. They simply won't do it. You know, judging, you know, spoken just a few moments ago about how usually the tone and it is absolutely spot on from Watford, I find anyway. I went into bat really for them to say, look, they're not going to have forgotten about Maps. And ultimately, you know, Scott acknowledged, admitted, whichever way you want to call it, that they dropped a bit of a rick on that one. And I was very, very surprised and, yeah, a bit disappointed. Jacob, reading between the lines a little bit there, that it could have dragged on a little bit longer and things didn't end the way they wanted. But nevertheless, I think whenever a player leaves, it probably, more often than not, there's something that hasn't gone quite right for whatever reason. So surprised and disappointed by that. And I have a few people on Twitter an apology, I think, because I was pretty firm in my stance that if we were patient, we'd hear something from Watford. And yeah, Scott basically admitted that they got that one wrong. So I did too. But yeah, big surprise and slightly disappointing that. But obviously they regret it. And it was, you know, this is the beauty of these things. It gives Scott an opportunity to acknowledge it and apologise. So I think at least it's out there in the open. But yeah, surprised and disappointed by that one.
Yeah, because he is an honest fellow, and you know, I've been to many of these events and seen Scott talk, and I think the circumstances of being in a well-lit, cameras in front of you situation, it wasn't the same Scott Duxbury I've normally seen at these events. It wasn't quite as light and humorous as he normally is once the crowd in the room sort of warm up and, you know, and he opens up. And I think maybe another situation is the fact that he knows it's going out for the whole world to see right there, not just the people in that room.
The dynamic was very different, John. You're right to touch on it. And it's great that it was well presented. But without the fans there, there's no one to bounce off. Did as well as they could, I think, with the format. But there's no sort of natural flow to it. And often someone would respond to a, you know, if I ask a question, someone else might follow up off the answer at the back of that and so on and so forth. And I think that sort of natural ebb and flow wasn't really there. Through no one's fault, that was just the dynamic of it. And it didn't really probably allow anyone, Scott Duxbury in particular, to loosen up, did it? And like you say, we didn't see the Scott Duxbury that we've seen before. You know, he's a good orator, he's a good speaker, he's usually very open, and I think he does react well to being in the same room with people. And that just wasn't there tonight, and you did feel that was that was missing, and we perhaps didn't get the performance is the wrong word, but you know what I mean. We didn't get the sort of connection that we might have ordinarily got for obvious reasons.
So the other sort of important thing, Jacob, we heard about was, and I thought I wanted to know about more than anything, is about the finances of the club. And overall, he seemed chipper about it.
Yeah, he did. I think it was obviously a big positive was hearing how they've always set out the Pozzos and Scott Duxbury, how they want to be here for the long term. And he reiterated again that Gino, this is his home. He wants to be here. This is his football club. But even with the finances, I don't know. On the one hand, yes, it was good to hear about it. But on the other hand, I think it was, I don't know, a little bit negative towards it, actually. I think we mentioned on the WhatsApp group, you know, repeatedly saying relegation is a financial disaster. Now, I don't know whether he's suggesting that it's been a financial disaster at Watford, but he wasn't talking about it very positively. He also reiterated about how it was important to keep the assets we had rather than sell. And I know with Estupiñán and Suarez, that was made pretty clear that they left because they didn't want to be here. I think Scott Duxbury, they've always been very shrewd with their business. They know it's a difficult period for the world, let alone the football club. And we all know at the moment it's going to be financially straining on the club. But I think they've done pretty well with the transfer business. And it seemed that they've got it under control and the best of a bad situation, really. So yeah, I think that was mostly positive, but yeah, it did seem that he was frustrated about the massive financial gap between the Premier League and the Championship. And obviously when asked about project big picture, he was keen to reiterate that gap needs to be closed as quickly as possible.
Yeah, because he said, didn't he, that I think the budget is never balanced, but we're financially stable, which is probably about as good as it gets for a football club.
And they'll find a way to survive, he says. Yeah.
But I did think it was interesting the way he framed it, saying, you know, it shouldn't be a financial catastrophe. It should be a competitive disappointment. And I think that's probably kind of right, isn't it? And perhaps that's the sort of balance that the Premier League have tried to strike with the parachute payments over the year. But whether that was him alluding to that there needs to be a better solution to project big picture or whatever the solution is to fix the pyramid, because obviously under this situation there are some big issues facing clubs all over the place. So whether that was him saying something needs to be done is not sure. But I think overall, you know, the financial picture, it sounded to me like he was pretty bullish is probably a bit strong, but, you know, saying, look, this is as good as we'd expect it to be at this stage, which I guess, you know, we have to take it at face value as supporters, don't we? And that's good enough for us. We don't have to lie awake at night worrying about the balance sheet. That's Scott and Gino's job. So if they're happy, then I guess we should be happy.
He did mention supporters not being at the games a few times. soul destroying, he said, which is true. We got that, Scott.
I have to say, John, and you know, I am lucky enough to be at the games with work, and I agree. It for the first time this year, you know, going to football feels like I'm going for work, for a job. And I don't mean to sound ungrateful. I know people would sort their right arm to get to go to a game, but it's very hard to articulate just how much it doesn't feel like football without the supporters there. It feels sort of inherently pointless, which was what Scott said a lot. And it really does. It just feels empty. It feels soulless. You think, what is the actual point? We're fulfilling a fixture for fixture's sake. Red lorry, yellow lorry, red lorry. So I know he did labour the point, but having been there myself, it's so, so true. I understand why he kept going back to it, because I think it's difficult to articulate that. It's difficult to get that point across for people who are so starved of sport. And again, I don't mean to sound ungrateful, but it is just so odd. It is so, so weird and, quite frankly, a little bit depressing.
A couple of little things sort of that came and went a little bit. They weren't, let's not call them huge things, but they were interesting when they came up. Julie Lewis, or Mama Lewis, as she is to Andy and Kate, she talked about the radio silence from the club, and I definitely felt that as well. And Scott did say he was surprised by that. He did sort of say he had said things, but I think what Julie was probably getting at was the fact that the gaps between the things that were said were quite huge in the panic of a relegation time, even though in the day after a good message was put out, it was a long time before another one was. And I felt, you know, it was interesting that Scott didn't feel that, Mike.
Yeah, he was quite bullish, really, wasn't he, on that? He said he didn't feel it at all. And then he did sort of allude to the fact how busy they've been and how difficult a period it's been. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, a lot of people have been saying that the communication hasn't been great. And when I say a lot of people, I mean supporters. And football supporters are notoriously hard to please. Let's not forget that. You know, I am one, and I am notoriously hard to please, as you know only too well, John. And Jacob, you're finding out to your cost on our off-mic chats. But so football supporters are notoriously hard to please. But if the football supporters are saying, if Watford supporters are saying we don't feel the communication has been good enough, then perhaps the communication hasn't been good enough. You know, it's pretty black and white. And, you know, we'd said on the WhatsApp group, Scott said he was surprised by that criticism. But then we've had follow up questions about communication on the stadium, communication on Mariappa, communications on Nigel Pearson leaving. And obviously there's sensitive issues around there. But I think that it would have perhaps, he did acknowledge certain things later in the piece, and I think perhaps that might have been an opportunity to acknowledge that, okay, we're listening, we'll hear that feedback and come back to you. But yeah, it was quite jarring, so probably overstating a little bit. But yeah, he was quite entrenched in his view that he thought the comms had been good enough. I guess from his point of view, what can you say? We're working on it, we've been relegated, we know we're going to try and get Watford back into the top flight as soon as possible. That's the message, really.
Jacob, what else stood out for you in the evening?
One of the answers from Ivic actually really got my attention. It was about the left-back situation. Now, I think as Watford fans, we can all agree that we've been needing a left-back since Adam Messina's injured at the moment. I know Ken Semmer can do a role there, and obviously Kiko can fill in, but it would be nice to have an out-and-out left-back as a cover for Messina, or even take his spot. And we obviously opted for the 5-3-2, 3-5-2 since Ivic has come in. And the suggestion was that that wasn't his preferred formation. That's the formation he's kind of been forced to use due to the lack of a natural left-back. We know Adam Messina can play there, but he's out injured and on the road to recovery. And he said, if we can get in a left-back, I think that's a position he wants to bring in, then we can revert to the 4-3-3, which has been known to play at Maccabi Tel Aviv before, and some really nice free-flowing football. So that's definitely one to look out for. Whether we dip into the free agent market, we'll have to wait and see. But certainly I got the impression from Ivic that he wants another left-back, and actually he said one or two players. I don't know what other position he was thinking of, maybe a depth in another area. I think left-back's obviously the priority. Who we can get in, I'm not too sure. But yeah, that's definitely one to look out for. Obviously, over the Championship season, we're going to have to use a different styles, different formations. And I think certainly if we bring in a left-back, then we'll revert to the 4-3-3 that I think he'd prefer to use.
It was great to hear from Vladimir Ivic, I must say, but very, very unnerving to see him in civvies, not a Watford tracksuit. It was, most peculiar. And well done to the person who got a smile out of him right at the end there, asking which his favourite Elton John song was. I did enjoy that. But yeah, we've talked a lot about Scott Duxbury's answers, but it was interesting to hear from Vlad, wasn't it? And I think he probably, he straight-batted most of the answers as best he could. But good to sort of spend an hour, if you like, with the boss. And I think one of the first things that he said which struck me was that he was aware of the situation. He came into it with his eyes wide open. I suspect he wasn't ever going to say anything different with his boss sat to a metre to his right, was he? But he was at pains to say that he understood what the situation was going to be with finances, that players were going to be going. So I thought that was interesting. I never really doubted that with him. He doesn't really strike me as the kind of guy who's going to turn up and say, oh, hang on a minute, I thought I'd still have Deulofeu, Danny Welbeck and all these. He's someone that does his homework, I think. So not a big surprise. But yeah, it was really, really nice to hear from him as well.
I think what was really interesting about what Vlad was saying was obviously the priority is to get promoted this season. I think if we don't get promoted, it's a failure. But also his other objective was to play as much youth as possible. Yeah. Now, I think over the last few seasons, we've been guilty of playing aging players. And this whole period has been probably the most difficult time to do it, but a complete rebuild of the squad was needed. And I think he seems like the right man to do that. And obviously time will tell, but he's got a real focus and emphasis on playing as much youth as possible. We mentioned Jeremy Ngakia, Tom Delibashiri, who we know is out at the moment with the injury, João Pedro, of course. We've got plenty of youth coming through, plenty of talent, and he seems like he really wants to utilise that alongside some more of the experienced players. So that was a really encouraging thing to hear from him as well.
That's encouraging for me, Jacob, as well, because I've seen some of those players playing. Well, we've all seen them play for Watford this year, and it's given me a sort of renewed sort of sense of belonging, and they're quite an important connection to the club, seeing those younger players come through. It feels like we're building again, as opposed to sort of trying to put sticking plasters on and tread water a little bit. So that's been exciting to me. But also what I thought was good, as I mentioned earlier, that Scott Duxbury made a couple of acknowledgements, and one of those was that they've kind of taken the eye off their ball to a degree with youngsters playing for Watford, which I thought was interesting that he made that acknowledgement as well. And the other thing that he said, which kind of leads into it, was that they felt that, they've lost their identity a little bit over the last couple of years, which feeds into that as well, doesn't it? And I thought those were two sort of interesting admissions, and I think they were quite refreshing to hear as a supporter, because especially at the moment when we're not at games, we do need that connection, don't we? It's more important than ever that this is a club and a team that we can get behind and believe in and feel something about. And I think addressing those issues, going back to basics a little bit, bringing in some younger players that we can see develop in the yellow shirt and hopefully go on to deliver success for Watford and then go on to forge a career. That's kind of what we see I'm going to use the word project, but see the Pozzo model doing, isn't it? Getting success for Watford and success for players, and that really hasn't been the case over the last sort of 18 months or so, and a return to that, those targets and aims seemed to be pretty high on both men's agenda, didn't it? And that was nice to hear, I thought.
Yeah, Scott definitely made a thing about separating the club success. That was the off-the-pitch stuff and the on-the-pitch, which they are sorting out still. But, Jacob, you know, at the end of it, it was only an hour. I think it was quite a good length sometimes. The other fans' forums have been to sort of drag on a little bit. How are you feeling about Watford after listening to what Vlad and Scott had to say?
I think the fans' forum is always a really good thing just because it's very honest, open. And I know Scott didn't want to touch on a few of the questions, didn't really want to go into depth about certain things. I think the Nigel Pearson situation was one which, I mean, it was a good effort from the man who asked, but he wasn't going to get more than just it was in the best interest of the football club. We learned a few things. As I said before, the Mary Apple one was probably the bombshell and probably the headline, if you like, from the whole fans' forum. But I think the club are doing the best they can in this situation, not only with Hive Live, but also doing the fans forum as well. And I also thought that the video questions were really good. And as I said, made the best of a bad situation, because we all want to be at Vicarage Road or at the locations they do all over the country doing these fans forum in person. But I think, yeah, they did a really good job with it. But in terms of how I'm feeling about the football club at the moment, as Mike said, I'm just excited, actually. I think Ducks, we mentioned a lack of identity, I think, over the last couple of seasons. And I feel with Ivic, we're on the path to rediscovering that. Obviously, wins do help. And we've had a very solid start to the season. But what's also encouraging is I don't think we've played our best football. And it's only going to improve from here, I think. And that's hopefully if we can keep our main players fit. We've got Husey coming back, Kapoo, Saar, Deeney, Gray. I mean, we've got a lot of quality. I don't think there's any discussion that we've probably got the best squad in the Championship. It's just whether we can utilise our talent at the right times and at the right areas. And if the schedule, as Ivic actually identified in the fans' forum, the three-day fixture and the gaps between the fixture, he identified that that's going to be something to challenge and something to work with. But yeah, I'm really excited for this season and looking forward to seeing where it goes.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network, this is From the Rookery End.
Mark, the one thing that sort of is, we recorded that on Monday, and the thing that I've sort of kept in my head, the thing I don't quite feel answered, I don't think it's going to be answered quickly, is this commitment that Scott put to playing youth.
Yeah, I wonder if it was like an acknowledgement that they hadn't done it as much, they hadn't committed so much to youth in the past couple of seasons, which has been apparent. And one of the things that we've liked in the past about being Watford supporters is using that youth. And I think the fact that Scott acknowledged that they hadn't focused so much on that over the past sort of, well, period really, perhaps over the Premier League period, they've sort of not tapped into it as much. That is clearly going to have to change for a number of reasons, and I think it's going to be fascinating over the coming weeks just to see how that manifests itself.
Mike caught up with Adam Leventhal, the Watford correspondent for The Athletic, to find out his views and what he's found out, because, you know, he knows a lot more about the deep depths of what goes on at Vicarage Road and the wider world of football, about if there will be opportunities for the young players at Watford this season.
Yeah, I think there are some good examples of younger players now being given an opportunity. And I think in the past it was a necessity because Watford couldn't go out and spend big money. Now it's a necessity because we've had to trim our squad and we have to give some younger players opportunities. If you were to say it to another team's fans and you would say, oh, you know, we're going to give youth a chance, they would be going, oh, well, right, who's the top player that you're going to be bringing through your academy? Obviously, with the Pozzo approach, it's not necessarily going to be homegrown talent that is coming through, although the hope would be that, you know, the likes of Daniel Phillips and Sonny Blue Low Everton or someone like that perhaps could come through.
In your investigative work, Adam, over the last sort of period of time, of those players that perhaps that we haven't seen so much of, like Sonny Blue Low Everton, who would you say is, I'm putting you on the spot here, you can see the panic in your eyes, but Who is the player that perhaps Watford supporters haven't seen much of that you think, or the club have the highest hopes for at the moment?
It's difficult to tell because I think having sort of reappraised the way that they've run their academy, they're trying to get everyone up to a decent standard. And you've got to remember that Watford's academy is a couple of rungs below, you know, Premier League level. So, and I think we got a little bit of a glimpse when we saw those games against Tranmere last year. Well, some of them were early this year. It seems like a long old bloody year, doesn't it? Some of them aren't quite up to standard yet, and they're still trying to evolve it, trying to work out, right, do we bring players in or do we just bring them through our own academy, you know, under-16s, under-17s, through to the under-23s, or, you know, how are we going to do this? So I think that's still a work in progress. Going back to your original point, I think if you look at how we are sort of trying to evolve, yes, you've got younger players now who have been part of the model, the likes of, obviously, you know, Ismaïla Sarr, let's not forget. Yes, he's an established player who's worth 40, 50 million pounds or whatever, but he's still very, very young. You've got João Pedro, 19 years old. You've got Jeremy Ngakia, who's been brought in. You've got Ben Wilmot, who's been drawn back. You know, he's now playing. You've got Daniel Backman in behind Ben Foster. You've then also cut off some of the older players in that defensive line, the likes of Holobas and Adrian Mariapa. Obviously, the goalkeeper, Aurelio Gomez, has gone as well. And you're bringing in a younger player like William Tristekong, who's only 27, so, you know, he's still in his 20s, and he can be here for the next 5 years. So I think when people think of younger players, they think, oh, right, well, we're going to be full of 18, 19-year-olds. But no, it's about sort of getting rid of the 32-year-olds. And let's not forget, we could have lost Deeney, we could have lost Capu. Yes, we've had a couple of other older players transition over to Udinese and things like that, like Prodil and stuff like that. But it's about getting the core players in your 20s. Yes, if you lose Capu, you keep Hughes. He's what, 25? Shalabar, he's 25. That's the sort of evolution, I think. And, you know, utilising the players that you've got in the building already. So I think that those moves are already happening. It's not going to be in the traditional sense where there's going to be this thrust of academy players, but I think it is happening. Going back to your other question about someone who might be, you know, might be on the radar.
Bought yourself some thinking time there, Adam.
No, but it just
lovely.
Reminded me, you know, someone like Ryan Cassidy, for example, you know, young striker who was coming through the ranks and doing really, really well. You know, a few things went on last year, but now he's got a loan move, you know, out to Accrington Stanley, can go and play some football. And I think that's what the club needs to be better at. You know, you look at Tottenham, for example, they get their players, and this is where William Tristekong has also experienced. You know, if they think that you're good enough, they'll send you out on loan and then you can come back, the likes of Harry Kane, Andros Townsend, all those sort of players. Watford need to be better at doing that, and it's good to see some of the younger players like Ryan Cassidy going out, hopefully scoring some goals, and then maybe coming back in, have another look at him, okay, go out on another loan. And then you'll start to reap the rewards down the line because you've got younger players playing men's football. And sometimes we're seeing in the first team at the moment, you've got some young guys who are thrown in and they haven't played much men's football and they need to play more of that before they actually come into the first team and be competitive.
So we've got some youngsters about to take the field this evening for Watford. As expected, Vladimir Ivic has shuffled his pack as the intensity of these fixtures gets more intense and intense with Wednesday, Saturday. We've got João Pedro and James Garner, probably the ones that fit into that bracket this evening. So thanks for that, Adam. Just in terms of The Athletic, what can people expect, or should they keep their eyes open for in the coming days and weeks?
I'm going to be writing, obviously, about this game, you know, looking at the best attack against the best defence. So compare how this goes. The teams are just coming out on the pitch as we sit here now. Also, something coming up on João Pedro as well. So look out for that. And then, obviously, it'll be interesting to see what happens on Saturday, meeting our old friends from the South Coast in Bournemouth. You know, two clubs doing different things in a new league with new managers. So we'll see how that goes. So loads coming up.
A Watford FC podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is From the Rookery End.
Thanks, Adam. And remember, if you want to subscribe to Athletic to read all Adam's articles, both past and in the future, you can go to theathletic.com/rookeryend, at the moment, you can get a subscription for as low as £1 a month. And also, by subscribing, you get to listen to From the Rookery End absolutely ad-free via the Athletic app. We're back again on Saturday after the game at home to Bournemouth. We had a good test today, Colin, against Blackburn, a real championship side doing little championshipy things to get an edge over Watford. This is going to be interesting, this one, because we're sort of playing Bournemouth, who we know quite well, and we want to sort of see how they've changed since relegation.
Yeah, I haven't seen them play since they have been playing in the championship, but they're doing pretty well. They've sold some key players, as we have. So I think we'll view it as a bit of a kind of physical kind of one-upmanship tussle. The rivalry is still there, which has slowly grown, I think, in the last five seasons. And we've had a lot of draws against them. We've had some stunning victories at their place. They've thrashed us at our place. So it's a game that, you know, that all Watford fans can look forward to with relish. Whether or not, you know, in a way, it's a battle of who's doing the best since relegation. And we'll see that. I think that what we saw tonight with Blackburn is a team that's really, really up for the fight. I think they'll be there or thereabouts at the end of the season, Blackburn. I can see them being in the top six. They look like a team ready to play in this league and ready to play that many games. And they will consider themselves perhaps a little bit unlucky, you know, that they didn't get a bit closer to getting something out of the game with the penalty and all that, which we've talked about. But moving on to Bournemouth, they'll be looking to come to put down a marker, to get a result against us and say, we are the best of the three that have come down. You're not going to get the best of us. And I think we have to approach that this game on Saturday in the same way, with the same attitude. You know, we have to really go out there and show our credentials as a Championship club. If the ultimate aim is to get promoted back into the Premier League, this is a massive game. Even though it's early in the season, we've had a good start. We're on 13 points from six games. And under the old Jason formula, if you win your home games and draw your away games and get two points per game over 46 games, that's 92 points, you're going to get promoted. So we're currently 1 point ahead of that formula. And the game on Saturday will give us another opportunity to take a step forward.
Mike, you know, the fact that this is Bournemouth, who will be deemed to be a slightly harder side to play against, then we've got Wycombe Wanderers on Tuesday. Do you think, and if you like to take on the character of Vlad, please do, do you think he's going to be picking a stronger side? And basically, we will see Etienne Capoue starting that game.
It depends whether he sees Etienne Capoue as a starter. You know, Colin has mentioned, well, we've all talked about how well some of the midfield performers have done. I think Garner did well as well. He pushed him, put himself around a lot today, and he got booted up in the air a fair few times, took one in the back, took one in the shin. So he's played well. So, you know, Capoue is going to have to force his way back into this side, I think, and he'll have to do that in training. I think we will see a changing team. You're right to allude to it, John, that the team that takes the field against Bournemouth will be different to the team that takes to the field against Wycombe. Now, I don't think that will be because Vladimir Ivic sees Wycombe as a lesser threat. I just think he sees that as the way he's going to have to manage this squad and this team if we're going to be successful in the Championship. I think as Watford supporters, what we need to do is really, really enjoy and savour this win against Blackburn. It was a fantastic football match, really. It's had so much going on, so many opportunities, so many chances, so many talking points, and Watford have come out on top having scored three goals, three times as many as we've scored in a game all season. So that's something to be happy about. We've looked pretty solid defensively ultimately, so a really, really good win. Another big challenge on Saturday, and then, you know, Wycombe is another challenge again. It's very, very different. They'll be set up not to concede as well, so will we have the quality to unpick a defence that is set in and will see us as a massive, massive scalp, certainly after the start they've had. They've got nothing to lose with a team that was playing in the Premier League just a couple of months ago coming to Adams Park. So there's no chance, I don't think, of Vladimir Ivic letting his charges underestimate that challenge. And we shouldn't either, but definitely want to savour this evening. A great win, some exciting football all round. Massive, massive game on Saturday. And really, that is for bragging rights at the moment. But on a more serious note, I think Colin is right. It could really set the tone for the rest of the season, because this is the first game really that we've had with the dust properly settled on the transfer window. You know, Friday night we played literally two and three quarter hours after the transfer window had shut, so you couldn't count that. This is a kickoff, and we've made a pretty good start, haven't we? What better way to carry it on than with a good performance and a big win over our old friends?
Thank you very much for your time, Michael.
No problem. Well done, Watford. Really enjoyed that. Proper match. Come on, you Hornets.
And thank you, Colin.
Thank you very much. I really, really enjoyed the game tonight.
Oh, it's another win for the Hornets. And we're up to third, if that means anything after six games. On to a game against Bournemouth. Come on, you Hornets!